dream of when they take a little tiger snooze.
What happened last night?
Do they dream of mauling zebras or Halle Berry in her Catwoman suit?
Nobody's seen Doug. He's not here.
Oh, shit.
Don't you worry, you pretty striped head. We're gonna get you back to Tyson and your cozy tiger bed. And then we're gonna find our best friend Doug. And then we're gonna give him a best friend hug.
Who was that guy? He was so mean.
Doug.
I married a whore.
What is going on?
But if he's been murdered by crystal meth tweakers.
No!
In the face! In the face!
No! Well, then we're shit out of luck.
I'm gonna beat ya.
Rough night.
So what do you guys got under there?
Tiger.
Hello and welcome to Weekly Monotony, the official podcast of the entertainment blog dailymonotony.com. And if you're thinking that there's going to be a co-host this week, yeah, that's not going to happen. So this week we're switching up the order of things a little bit. We're actually not going to do what we've been watching because we have tons, well, I say we, I mean I have tons of cool stuff to talk about because last week was E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo in Los Angeles, California. California. And quite possibly the biggest video gaming conference every single year during the summer. Lots of fun, exciting stuff, but I did manage to see a movie, so first off, I'm going to do a short review of the first big comedy of this summer, which is The Hangover by director Todd Phillips, starring Bradley Cooper, Ed Helms, Zach Galifianakis, and Justin Bartha, only kind of partly for Justin Bartha. So, if you've seen the trailer for this movie, the premise is it's three guys throwing a bachelor party for their friend who's getting married. They have one crazy, crazy, crazy night, which they wake up in the morning, everything is trashed, everything is crazy, and no one remembered what went on the previous night. Thus starts off this sort of hilarity of figuring out how all the craziness occurred to them, to their apartment, what exactly happened. A lot of gags, a lot of humor, a lot of not-so-appropriate humor, but you can kind of guess what film you're going to go see, since Todd Phillips is the director of very famous comedies, Old School, and even further back beyond then, Road Trip. So, as a comedy, I think this movie's been getting a lot of pretty good reviews. In fact, if you look at the Rotten Tomato meter, I think it was somewhere up in like the 75% region. And I have to say, if you're going to this movie and you're expecting a comedy about sort of bumbling kind of dumb people, that's exactly what you're going to get. And that's sort of the kind of comedy that Todd Phillips is known for. And I have to say, you know, I went and saw this in a PAX group of or a PAX theater with, you know, a bunch of people there at a Saturday night, late night showing, so, you know, not younger teeny boppers who snuck their way into the theater. And I admit, I had a great time. It's a very fun movie, a very hilarious movie to watch, especially if you're with the right group of people who sort of know when to laugh, know when to sort of take the comic beats. And this movie sort of has the philosophy of not trying to be incredibly clever with their humor, as, say, some other maybe smarter or maybe British comedies would be. This is definitely the sort of machine gun approach to comedy. So they throw jokes at you as fast as you can take them. And just like a machine gun, about, you know, 60% of those are probably going to hit and about 40% are going to not hit at all. And there are definitely noticeable moments where you saw a character trying to be funny, especially the sort of the main, I guess, kind of moron character, the sort of, I guess, the curly of this sort of Three Stooges group, which was played by Zach Galifianakis, who's basically playing this kind of young, socially awkward, fat-bearded guy. And I think a lot of his stuff just really didn't fly. It almost felt like he was trying to do kind of like a Dumb and Dumber approach to his comedy. And while some of it is definitely very funny, a lot of it just seemed random and oddly placed. But again, this is a movie, I think, that, you know, if you're going for, you know, a slightly off-color but pretty funny movie, I think this movie really does succeed. And surprisingly, too, because there are no big names in this. And usually when you hear of summer comedies, you think of maybe, like, Year One, which is coming out, which has Michael Cera and Jack Black in it. You know, big name stuff. A Will Ferrell comedy or something like that. And this really does an amazing job at being funny with relatively no-name actors. I mean, the only guy I really knew from this was Ed Helms, who plays the character of Andy Bernard on The Office. And so it really is impressive to see a director sort of take a mediocre script and take basically a bunch of that guy, no-name actors, and put together what I think overall is a pretty successful comedy. It's definitely a quotable movie. You'll be coming out of it saying many of the quotes, though probably not saying them in polite company. But I mean, you know, what can you expect? That's this kind of movie. I think, to put it succinctly, it's the kind of movie you're going to walk out of saying, gee, that was a dumb movie, but you're going to say it with a smile on your face. And that's, I mean, what can you expect from a summer comedy, but something like that. It's good fun. I would definitely, if you've been interested in seeing it, if it looks like it's your kind of comedy, it's got my thumbs up. So go check it out. Of course, remember though, this is a rated R comedy, and while it's probably not the most, probably not the hardest rated R comedy out there, I mean, there's definitely a lot of adult themes in the comedy. So remember that, kids. Don't go see rated R movies until you're old enough to appreciate bathroom humor. So that aside, I'm going to jump into what is the main portion of this week's Weekly Monotony, which is, of course, going over all the amazing things that happened last week at E3. And I have to say, it's probably one of the best E3s we've had in a long time. Though it's kind of interesting. I've been listening around, reading some sort of the general take on what has been going on at E3, and I thought it was interesting. Adam Sessler, who, of course, is famous for the show X-Play on G4 TV, sort of put it that, you know, many years we say, oh man, that was a great E3. There was, you know, these three games that just stood out above this sort of sea of mediocrity. And man, those games look awesome, and they're all coming out this year. Man, it's going to be the best year in gaming ever. This year's E3 was not quite like that. There really was nothing that stood out of the crowd, at least not really. But saying that, it doesn't mean that there weren't great games. It's kind of weird. Like, I think as Adam Sessler said, it's a very well-rounded year. It almost felt like this was a very even year. A lot of great games, none of them really seeming like they're terribly better than the other, but, I mean, if you have to contrast that to, like, three great games that just really stick out over a bunch of games that suck, or 15 great games that are all probably about as equally exciting, but none really standing out above the other, I mean, I would have to say that the latter is maybe though, you know, adding some more problematic choice into what you're going to buy this fall is definitely far better for the gaming industry. Definitely far better for the gaming consumer, because we have, you know, whatever you choose to want to play, at least as long as it's a shooter or a third person action game, you have tons of options, tons of settings, and they all look incredibly amazing. So, from that much, I imagine you probably won't see as general excitement in the press, just because there's so much. You're not gonna be able to sort of pull out the three things and kind of tout them as this is the best the gaming industry has to do. Everything's gonna get spread out over, you know, these 15 amazing looking games. But that said, I did sort of go through the list of games and pull out some of the ones that look particularly interesting and ones I think are gonna be very exciting, even though the rest of their peers, if I don't mention them, are still also incredibly exciting. So the first one I want to pull out was one that was first demoed at the Microsoft E3 press conference, then later on the show floor, and this is the fifth installment in the very famous Splinter Cell series, the Tom Clancy game series, about Sam Fisher, a super spy. Generally considered a stealth action game, so you can, if you remember the previous games, the one for the original Xbox, it was all about sort of trial and error, hiding in the shadows, using this amazing lighting engine to sort of stay in the shadows, stay away from people, try to not get caught and accomplish your objective. And they sort of did that for, you know, the game after that and the game after that and even the game after that. And this one, the whole premise is he's taken on this persona that his daughter has been killed, and he's trying to figure out who did it. So he's left the agency. He is now on the run. He's a fugitive, and he's basically out for vengeance and out to try to find out what happened to his daughter. And so the game looks far more action-oriented, which, I mean, you could say, well, maybe that's a bad direction for this, but, you know, me not being a super huge fan of stealth action games, at least one stealth games where it's, you know, you take 20 minutes, watch the guard's route, figure out what route he's going on, and then make your move. If you get it, you get past it. If you don't, you have to go back and start the whole process again. To me, that runs a little slow, and this really excited me because it does look like far more action-oriented. Though, that's not really why it excited me, because there's plenty of great third-person action shooter games. What really set this game apart is it seems like it understood that it's just doing something that a lot of other games do well, so how can we innovate on what we're doing well? Like, how can we move this genre forward of the third-person action shooter? And here's some of the cool things, and I didn't see anyone else even sort of coming close to doing these sort of new things that Splinter Cell Conviction was doing. First of all, they have this amazing new way of doing sort of storytelling. Rather than having cutscenes in between segments, what they do is they project things into the environment. Like, so this opening sequence, he's interrogating this guy, and when the guy's talking about something, rather than showing like a flashback sequence, they project like this black and white image, or there's this black and white movie over the entire scene, and actually, you know, it actually looks like there's a projector like off in one wall projecting a movie on people. And it's not actually a movie, it's not actually part of the environment, it's just something, it's kind of a way to tell the story without having to pull you out of the environment. And they almost, for other things, like if you're trying to figure out what the objective is, like they'll actually project up on like this building walls almost in kind of a fringe way of where text kind of enters into the environment. So like along the wall of the objective you're supposed to go for, or you're supposed to go to, you get this thing that says like, you know, infiltrate this building, or on the other side you'll be like, go this way, or you'll have, you know, flashbacks being projected on this wall over here. It's this really cool immersive way of telling the story, and I have to admit, I just love seeing games that innovate in this way. But even beyond that, it seems like the action elements of this game are also quite impressive. Like, they have this concept of tag and execute. So I think a lot of the problems with third-person shooters, and for most people, the kind of barrier for entry is even a third-person shooter, I think, is a little more difficult to aim and shoot things than a first-person shooter. And what this tag and execute thing lets you do is it really... The way Ubisoft tried to sell this game is that, you know, you're not Sam Fisher, but Sam Fisher is Sam Fisher, and he can shoot people very easily. You know, he can grab a guy, crack his neck, and then turn around and you know, shoot, pop two guys in the head from far away. So what this tag and execute thing kind of lets you do is you can look through a window, you can tag the guys that you want to execute, and then you can, so that's the sort of tag mechanic, and then you can basically press a button, and it pulls you in, kind of like auto locks you over to the guy's heads, and bam, bam, you can take these guys out. Now, the way they prevent this from becoming just like a sort of easy cheat mechanic is you have to earn your tag and executes. And the way you earn a tag and execute is by doing something like a stealth kill, like sneaking up on someone and taking them down, or, you know, throwing them off a ledge. That earns you the tag and execute move. And it's just a really cool way of mixing this sort of, you know, stealth kill and action kills. And, man, it just looks really awesome. They also have this really cool way of showing your last known location. So what, if you remember from the Splinter Cell games, one of the things you could do is, you know, if you're trying to take out a guy in the shadows, you could whistle, and then the guy would come over there and investigate what was going on. Well, now when you go into shadows, they leave this kind of ghosted image of you where you last were, and that's basically your last known location. And you can actually see this sort of 3D ghosted rendering of where you were, and that is used as a way to kind of tag and let yourself remember where you were and where the enemy is now going to go investigate. So you can use that as a visual marker to kind of plan your next moves and, you know, sneak around or get in through a door, or use that to sort of initiate an action stealth kill sequence. Either way, you know, this is a game that's going to be exclusive to Xbox 360, and I think a game that people are really going to get excited about once we see more media coming out for it, once we see more advertising come out for it. And I really you know, I haven't played through a full Splinter Cell game since the first one. I played Pandora Tomorrow, which was the sequel, because I had some fun multiplayer, but never played through the main campaign because I was just sick of doing this trial and error stealth action campaign. I am super looking forward to this game. I'm definitely going to buy it, going to play through it. And I'm just excited to be excited about a Splinter Cell game again. That's just a really fun place to be. So Splinter Cell Conviction, definitely in my top group of games I saw at E3. The next one I want to go into is a game that is for a console that I've just been warming up to thanks to the game Infamous, which I've still been playing and still absolutely love. If you've got a PS3, you got to go out and buy Infamous. It's pretty awesome. And that game is Uncharted 2. So this is the sequel to Uncharted 1, surprisingly enough, which was this kind of... I've heard people kind of refer to it as a mix of Tomb Raider and Indiana Jones with a little bit of Nathan Fillion thrown in there, which, you know, sounds like an amazing game. But in the end, again, it's a third-person shooter, as if you read the article I put up about there being too many shooters, you'll get that concept as I go through these games. But it just looks so... It just looks so good. Like, of the games at E3, I think this game probably looked the best graphically. So the last one took place in like a sort of jungly environment, very much Tomb Raider style. This one takes place in a sort of South American city. It almost looks like Machu Picchu or something on the outskirts of Machu Picchu or something like that. You see this kind of, you know, like these sort of terraced stone grass mounds or something. But it just looks so beautiful. And then top that off, this game has amazing sounding voice work that's being done, as the original game was sort of hailed for. So it looks like you have this, you know, combined awesome story, absolutely gorgeous graphics, and I'm so happy to see someone finally sort of taking advantage of the PS3, which was supposed to be this powerhouse, and this game really does look like it's taking full advantage of this, the raw processing capabilities of the PS3. You have this sort of fun, almost Assassin's Creed mechanic to it, where you can climb on buildings, and as you climb on stuff, like if it's a sign, since you're in this South American town, the sign may break off, and you can see them like hanging and dangling there by this sign. Really cool way of putting stuff together. Really cinematic looking. Really bright and vibrant and colorful. And that's one thing that I just love to see. I love to see that trend coming back, because if you look at games, you know, like Gears of War, even the original Call of Duty Modern Warfare, everything was shades of gray, very mute tones, very unsaturated colors. And this game almost goes completely opposite. It's like super saturated, bright, vibrant colors. And I just love to see that in a game, especially a game as beautiful looking as Uncharted 2 looks. And I have to admit, you know, in this huge, very crowded realm of 3D or third-person action shooters, if you're looking for one, and especially if you have a PS3, like, I have to think this is probably going to be the best of them all coming out. And, you know, that's saying a lot, because there are a lot of third-person action shooters coming out. But Uncharted 2 definitely, I think, ranks at the top of those games that I saw. It's, you know, now saying that after talking about Splinter Cell Conviction, it's really hard how to put them together. But, you know, great game for the exclusive for 360, and also great game exclusive for Sony. So I'm really happy to see that sort of parity entering into the picture, rather than this kind of, I think, what was a very heavy mix towards just the Xbox 360. So, good news for PS3 fans, good news for people who own both consoles, which would be me, so I'm always happy to see both doing things well. Moving on, the next game I thought really looked exciting is a sequel to a game that was for the Xbox 360, one of, maybe not one of my favorite games, but just a really solid game from one of my favorite developers, BioWare, and this game is Mass Effect 2. So the original Mass Effect, this really fun sci-fi shooter RPG, almost though more kind of RPG than shooter, and that was one of the biggest criticisms of the original Mass Effect. They tried moving away from this pseudo turn-based thing they had done with games like Knights of the Old Republic, and moved to this more action shooter platformy thing, which it didn't really work that well. Well, the great news is Mass Effect 2 looks like they've nailed that aspect of it. The shooting looks great. Apparently, people are saying it's very close to, like, Gears of War. A great cover system, also kind of like Gears of War, where you can lock to stuff. Absolutely beautiful-looking stuff. I love Mass Effect's version of the future and their view of this kind of bright, shiny future. I love that milieu of this kind of sci-fi future with all these different weird alien races and all these different kind of bright colors. And also it has, you know, it's, they said this about the original Mass Effect, and I have to admit, it has this kind of, the original Mass Effect had this film grain filter they put over everything. They kind of dialed that one down for Mass Effect 2, but it still has this filmy look. I think more than any other game, it looks like you're playing this awesome looking sci-fi movie, and yeah, just absolutely beautiful looking. And the cool thing is I think they've really tried to ratchet up their conversation mechanics. So that was one of the big deals about the original Mass Effect, is rather than having you choose through a bunch of options of this is exactly what I'm going to say, you had this kind of mood wheel which you could use on the analog sticks to say, well, this is what I'm trying to get across with this statement, even though if that's not exactly what the character is going to say. So if someone is talking to you and talking about this hostage situation, you would get like a mood wheel that would say, oh, well, we should go help them. And it'd be like very few words, but then the actual words that were spoken by the main character would be something more in the lines of what you get from a movie script or, you know, real dialogue. And that was one of the really cool things about this. But the kind of problem they had with this, and this is a problem with all RPGs, is a lot of times you like to work through all the possible possibilities going through a dialogue train. So you try every mood wheel answer they can give just to see where you can go with things. And the problem with that is they put it in this very static environment. So, you know, they show one talking head talking, and they show you talking, and they show the other guy talking, all static, all standing there. It just didn't really seem cinematic in many ways. It felt like a video game. Well, someone was watching that, and someone got the feedback and did the right thing, because in this game, when you're talking, rather than like standing still, you'll see people like on the move. I think I've heard people refer to it as almost being like, you know, episodes of the West Wing, you know. So it's not just, you know, hi, walk up to you, very still, talking for 30 minutes, then walk away. It's, we're walking during a hallway, we're having this conversation, we get, you know, to the spaceship, and we're still having this conversation. And they've added sort of ways that, you know, as we're moving through the environment, you can now, like, rather than just interrupt people by cutting them off, like, if you have this opportunity, like, there's this one sequence where you meet this assassin, and you're kind of, you know, you're in this movement, having this conversation, and then you have this opportunity where you're near a window to basically interrupt the guy and kick him out the window, and you can do that, sort of, like, break the conversation by just taking the guy out and pushing him out the window. So, really cool looking. It almost feels like Mass Effect 2 is what Mass Effect 1 wanted to be, but just couldn't be for whatever reasons. Maybe, you know, it's their first time through dealing with a new engine. And clearly last time they had some frame rate issues, probably one of the worst games for frame rate issues of the Xbox 360. But this time they've got it right, and they've nailed things down. They promised to lock 30 frames per second, so I'm really, really super excited for this game. If you liked Mass Effect 1, even if you didn't, I would say give Mass Effect 2 a try. It looks like it's going to be one of the games to really be excited about. So the games I've talked about so far are all pretty generic, and you also notice they all share a very common thing, is that they're shooters. In fact, there are plenty and plenty of shooters that are out there. I have a whole list of it and a whole article about it. You can read more about that on dailymonotony.com. But the next couple games I'm going to talk to you about really impressed me, because they're not only shooters, but they seem like they're trying to expand the gaming market. They almost feel like independent games in some way, like they're trying to do something entirely, completely new. The first of those games, and probably one of the games I'm most excited about for E3, is a game called Scribblenauts. So this is this very kind of low-key game. No one heard much about it until E3, but everyone's buzzing about it. It's this DS game, and the kind of shtick of this game is that they present you with very simple objectives. Like, you'll have this kind of cartoony-looking character, and there'll be this cat in a tree and a little girl next to it, and your objective is get the cat out of the tree. The way you do that, though, is not through some sort of gimmicky action platforming whatnot. It's, they give you a little way to enter text, and you can enter anything you can think of. It will appear in the world, and you can try to use it to solve these simple little puzzles. Now, when I say you can enter anything you can think of, I mean you can enter anything you can think of. They literally took a team of people, spent 6 months roaming through dictionaries, through encyclopedias, through the internet forums, and entered as many words and made as many objects for these words and animated them as they could possibly think of. And at E3, it almost became this kind of mini game to try to stump the dictionary, try to stump this game, try to come up with something that, you know, you couldn't think that, you know, that, you know, they had forgotten, and no one could do it. It's amazing how crazy this game looks. So if we go back to our scenario, we have the cat in the tree. You could do something very simple, like ladder. It produces a ladder, you climb up, get the cat. You could do something very simple, like get an axe and chop it down, or produce a mouse that'll get the cat to come down and come after the mouse, or produce a dog which will scare the cat out of the tree. Or you can do something crazier, like produce a rocket pack which lets you fly up and pick up the cat, or produce a flamethrower and burn down the tree which the cat will jump out of, or produce a kraken which will flop around and pull the tree down and probably kill the cat and the little girl. But it's just amazing, like anything you can think of. And to sort of illustrate this process, I'm going to read a little clip that I got from an article by the guys over at Joystick about this one thing where they were trying to, I guess, get one of these stars. And to get the star, the goal was to kill the shark which was in the water. And this is how things went. Another level placed a pool of water with a shark inside between us and the starite. While a few options may have allowed us to circumvent the shark-infested waters, we all decided to take him out. I tried dropping a sword on its head, pointy side down, but it bounced harmlessly off its thick hide. I then dropped a hairdryer into the water with more electrifying, fruitful results. Chris attempted to drop dynamite into the water, though the splash extinguished the fuse. He then threw waterproof C4 into the water, effectively recreating the end of Jaws. JC created a kraken, which fought with and ultimately bested the shark. Andrew created a teleporter in an attempt to instantly apparate to the starite. Instead, it took him to a medieval world where he was besieged by shadowy assassins. He tried distracting them with candy, then created a fairly anachronistic nuke. The nuke didn't detonate, however, so Andrew created a laser rifle to take out the assassins. One of his lasers grazed the aforementioned WMD and blew up the entire level. This game is mind-blowing, and it's a DS game. This is the kind of game you expect to see coming out of stuff like the Internet or the Independent Games Festival. This is just outside-the-box thinking, insanely clever stuff, stuff that produces emergent gameplay elements. I could not be more excited for a game at E3 this year. And I don't own a DS, but when this game comes out, I'm buying a DS. This is the reason to buy a DS. This is just absolutely amazingly insane. So Scribblenauts, put that on your radar. This is a game I think is going to be getting a lot of people's best game of show, even though it's this goofy little DS game going up against these, you know, huge AAA budget action 3D shooters. So Scribblenauts, really cool, really awesome. The next game I'm going to talk about is the game called Heavy Rain, which is an exclusive title for the PS3. So Heavy Rain is an adventure game, kind of like Indigo Prophecies, which really are the kind of long-term spiritual successors to the old Scum adventure games like Escape from Monkey Island, Day of the Tentacle, Indiana Jones. But the thing about Heavy Rain is it takes that concept, something that has actually sort of resurged now with the small developer Telltale, who's done a lot of new versions of like Sam & Max and did the Strong Bad cool game for awesome people. So this is not done by Telltale, but this has taken that concept, this sort of reemergence of the adventure concept, and has made this sort of adventure mystery survival horror game. Basically, it takes place in these very kind of noir filmic environments. You're a person basically just investigating a murder, basically trying to track down a serial killer, almost like an episode of CSI or something like that. And it's just, there's like absolutely no UI presented around you. It's all completely baked into what's going on in the game. And there's these kind of like quick time events where people will jump out at you, but rather than just kind of like, you know, putting like this big button up on the top of the screen, they kind of build it into a way that feels natural, in a way that I don't think any other games have felt. And I don't know what it is about this game. Like, there's some part of me that wants to say, oh, this is just going to be, you know, it's going to be another Dragon's Quest. It's going to be, you know, a bunch of cutscenes where you press the button to get the right thing to happen at the right time. But it just, for some reason, doesn't seem like that. There's something more cinematic about this game. There's something deeper to it. The fact that they have, like, these, you know, text UI elements, like, floating around in kind of weird ways, almost ways that reflect the mood of the character. And that's one of the cool things. It's like, as your character becomes more frightened, and probably as you, the gamer, becomes more frightened, the UI almost changes up around, almost in kind of like an Eternal Darkness way. I don't know, but this game just looks incredibly amazing. But probably a game that's, I don't know, it's going to be hard to describe and hard to sell to people until you actually take a look at it. But yeah, if you're into, you know, if you're into cop, or the, you know, like CSI mystery, murder mystery stuff, if you're into that kind of fiction, if you're into the kind of scarier side of that, this game just looks so cool and looks so different from anything else that's coming out there. Super excited for this game. I cannot describe it with words adequately, though, so check out my website. I'll have a video for it up, or just go check some of the other gaming news websites. See what they talked about, some of the hands-on impressions of this. Heavy Rain, though, again, bucking the trend. It's not a third-person shooter. It's an adventure game. It's a mystery game. It's a detective story. Absolutely excited about that. Love to see new stuff coming out, and love to see it getting really good reviews and great press from gaming enthusiasts and gaming pundits. I have a couple more things to talk about, but since I'm sort of going long on time and it's just me talking here, I'm going to talk about the last game I'm really excited about, which is Batman Arkham Asylum. So this is a game by Eidos, the, I believe, British company responsible for the Tomb Raider series. It's a Batman game, though not affiliated with the Batman, recent Batman movies, but more of like Batman, the comic book superhero. And I don't know, the basic concept of this game is that you're Batman, you've captured the Joker, you're taking him to Arkham Asylum, of course the famous asylum where all the supervillains of the Batman universe are held. And as soon as you get in, of course, you know, the Joker gets the best of Batman, takes over the asylum, and it's basically Batman trying to escape of this kind of, you know, funhouse nightmare situation. But the cool thing is that this is the first game that seems like it lets you be what Batman was. And what that is that you're this hunter from the shadows, and you use the environment to your own ability, and you use sort of what the Batman character from the comic book used. You use fear and intimidation to get the best of your enemies. And you know, in the basic, this is basically just a stealth action beat-em-up game, but in many ways seems much more than that. It's almost like a tactical strategy game in some ways. So what they'll do is they'll basically place you in these rooms, a bunch of thugs who've been let out trying to capture you, but what you can do is you can go up into the ceilings in these sort of nicely, conveniently placed gargoyles and hold on to them in the shadows. And then, of course, you're Batman, so you have all these gadgets, like you have this sort of X-ray vision thing you can turn on to see people, see where they're going. You have the Batarang, you have smoke bombs and stuff like that. And what you do is you sort of try to plan out your moves. So you can swing around to these different gargoyles, find a good position, then like swoop down, like take a guy out instantly by doing your sort of like, you know, bat-fly down thing. Knock him down, jump back up, the people come over, you know, they're freaking out, you know, you move over to the other side, you distract him with something else, maybe throw in a smoke bomb somewhere, they come in, take the other guy out, and like show up behind the other guy and do these crazy Batman kung fu moves. And you have to admit, the sort of kung fu beat-em-up action style stuff looks really, really top-notch. They're trying to make it, I think, slightly approachable to people, so like before you're about to be hit, they do this kind of comic booky like lightning bolt thing above the guy who's about to hit you, so you can do a counter move. Looks really fluid, really well animated. It's the Batman game everyone's been looking for, and it's surprising that it's coming out of Eidos, who really hasn't done a great game in a long time. But, you know, even that package together, like, I would be kind of pseudo-ly excited for this game, because, you know, it's a stealth action beat-em-up. I mean, there are games like that. You could almost argue that the game Watchmen The End of Nigh was kind of like that. It was a beat-em-up game based on a very, very popular DC franchise. But what really, I think, puts this one over the edge, ties a nice, pretty bow on top of it, is the voice acting for this game. If anyone remembers Batman the Animated Series, which, if you consider yourself at all a geek or nerd or dude who grew up in the 90s, you have to, because this is like the definitive Batman animated series. They basically went and found all those voice actors and got them all to come back and voice the parts. It's incredible the lineup they have. They have Mark Hamill playing the Joker, which, you know what? Heath Ledger did an amazing Joker in The Dark Knight. Stupendous performance. Brilliant take on the character of the Joker. But in my mind, I'm sorry, Jack Nicholson, Mark Hamill will always be the voice of the Joker. Like, when I think of him, when I read a comic book, I read the comic book with Mark Hamill's voice in my head. He is the quintessential Joker. You cannot get away from that. And the fact that even if they had just gotten him to come back, I would have been sold, because Mark Hamill as Joker, perfect. But they go beyond that. I mean, they got Kevin Conroy back to play Batman. He was the voice for Batman in the animated series, the voice for Batman in Batman Beyond, the old Bruce Wayne. Every one of those animated series, this guy is Batman doing the classic Batman and Bruce Wayne voice. Absolutely perfect. It's like jumping out of my, you know, childhood memories. They even got, like, small characters come back. They got Arlene Sorkin to come back. It's Harley Quinn. I love her voice of the Harley Quinn character. It's so perfect. It's that kind of goofy New York high-pitched girl accent. It's absolutely perfect. Glad to see her back playing that role. They even got minor characters, like Michael Ansara playing Mr. Freeze. I still think he's my Mr. Freeze voice when I read comics. Diane Pershing doing the voice for Poison Ivy. I mean, it's got, not only does it have basically every Batman villain in this game, but it has all, like, what I consider the authentic voices for these Batman characters. So to me, that's what really pushes the game over the edge. It's like, it's the wonderfulness of the acting styles, the voice acting styles of Batman the Animated Series, combined with what looks like this amazing kind of tactical stealth action beat-em-up game, letting you play Batman as Batman was meant to be played. And I'm also happy seeing that it's going towards the comic book style Batman. It's not trying to make money off of the sort of recent Dark Knight Christian Bale Batman. So, couldn't be happier. This game looks incredibly exciting. I think a lot of people were excited to see it at E3. Put it on your radar. Batman Arkham Asylum. So, you know what? There are plenty of other games that I thought looked incredible, and I'm, you know, looking forward to buying. And, you know, that's really how this E3 came out. Again, as I wrote my article, I almost felt a general sense of malaise coming out of this, sort of kind of unfulfilled, but I think it's because just there really wasn't that superstar thing that you can think of, like, oh yeah, this thing and that thing and that thing are going to be the three things I'm super excited for. It's this thing and that 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 thing, and I think it just spreads your excitement out too much that it's really hard to be incredibly excited about one particular thing. But I hope some of the ones I talked to you about have gotten you excited for some of the games. Again, check out the videos that are going to be posted up with Weekly Monotony. I'll have some videos I've gathered up of these really cool games. And of course, check out many of the other cool things that came out from E3. To name a few, check out Tim Schafer's new game, Brutal Legend. Looked pretty cool. Maybe not as awesome as I would have hoped it would be, but that's really just because I haven't gotten the chance to play it, and because Psychonauts was just like the best game in the world. Modern Warfare 2 looks awesome. Looks like more Modern Warfare, only better looking. Crackdown 2, I mean, Crackdown, I think, is a game people have really come back to appreciate, even though the original game was thought of, oh, you only buy it because I want to get in the Halo 3 beta. But I'm really excited about Crackdown 2. I thought the original Crackdown is one of the most underrated games of all time. Left 4 Dead 2, a sequel to another great game by Valve. Sadly, no talk about Episode 3 or Portal 2. That was probably my biggest disappointment about E3, but, you know, what can you do? So Left 4 Dead 2, another awesome game. Halo 3 ODST, looking awesome. Really, I think, taking the Halo 3 franchise in a cool direction. It's going to be kind of like this detective story with this open world environment where you go and investigate things. You're this orbital drop shock trooper who gets disconnected from his unit, and then you play, as you investigate and find new clues, you get to play as flashback sequences in these big action epic, more Halo 3 style battles as these other characters. Looks fun. Again, Bungie, I think, does great work in, like I said before, it's been long enough that I can't remember that I didn't really like Halo 3 so much, so I'm really looking forward to ODST. From the Nintendo side, we have Mario Galaxy 2, a new Mario game on the same console. This is the first time they've ever done that. Not as super excited because it kind of seems like a level pack, kind of like an expansion pack, but you know what? The original Mario Galaxy was cool enough. I'm happy to play more levels. So, and you know, you got Yoshi thrown in there too, so looks fun. Metroid Other M, new Metroid game that's not a Metroid Prime game, being done by Team Ninja. It looks like a third-person action game, almost a la the original Super Metroid games. Really looking forward to it. Looks great. Unfortunately, no gameplay demos, just a video to sort of get us excited. Looks cool. God of War 3, if you have a PS3, of course you're going to be playing that. Brutal as ever, as I think someone famously said, the character Kratos during one of the scenes when he's basically, attacking this... this centaur, he tauntauns the centaur, and if you've ever seen Empire Strikes Back, you might understand what that means. Really, really brutal looking, really gory looking, but the game looks fun. Looks like a continuation of the God of War series. The Last Guardian, a new game by the people who did Ico, the people who did Shadow of the Colossus. The games I think have come closest to being video games as art pieces. Do a new awesome game with what looks like you're this young kid and you're paired up with this huge towering kind of monster, which I've deemed the rat dog bird. It looks cool. It looks like it's going to be very cinematic, very heartfelt. You can almost bet this lovable looking monster character is going to die sometime at the end of the game, and you will be in real tears. Timiko, of course, managing to beat Peter Molyneux to the real emotions felt for video game characters. But speaking of Peter Molyneux, some amazing technology stuff shown out. Microsoft showing off Project Natal, this new video motion capture input device. It looks cool. It looks, of course, we only saw a couple kind of gimmicky games for it. It'll be interesting to see how it actually turns into real gameplay, but apparently the technology is amazing. Peter Molyneux's presentation, which was, as I have deemed, the sentient AI, which will kill us all. Peter Molyneux demoed this thing called Milo, which is this young little British boy character, and rather than it being like a game as you typically think, it's you interacting with this character and using the motion capture thing. He looks directly into your face. He notices the way you're moving. He notices the emotion you put off with your body language. There's a voice capture system from it, and he recognizes the tones of your voice, responds correctly to it, and this interesting little story vignette. If you haven't checked out a video for that yet, go check it out. It's mind-blowing, really exciting to see what people are going to do with this Project Natal stuff. I can see all sorts of cutscenes being done with now the characters will look at you, now they'll interact with you in a way, understand your vocal emotions, understand the way you're moving, the way you're facing. Looks really cool. I'm excited to see what people will do with it. And so many other great games. I mean, we've got the Beatles Rock Band. We got Pixel Junk Shooter, another great game from the Pixel Junk people, the guys who did Eden and Pixel Junk Monster. Really fun little, 2D games for the PS3. Awesome stuff. We got a new plastic peripheral to get with DJ Hero. That looks like an interesting game if you've been looking to put another plastic piece of junk on your your desk. Well, now you've got one to do it. There's I think too much to talk about, and I've been talking too long anyway. So I will say that is it for this week's episode of Weekly Monotony. E3 2009, absolutely amazing. Check out all the cool coverage out there on the internet. Check out the videos for the games I'm most excited about. Come back by the end of this week, and I will have my pick for Game of Show for E3 2009. Maybe you can figure out what it was. I tell you, it's one of the ones that I talked about during this show. And as always, come back to Daily Monotony as often as you can for movie reviews, game reviews, and news about those previous two as often as I can get them up, working the lone hours on the interwebs, blogging all my fun, amazing thoughts. And till next time, go read some E3 news. It's amazing.
It's alright.